a lot of brands in the room that I think we can get to really address these issues. I mean, I think part of the issue of technology, especially for democracy and for participation, is really about getting voice from the voices. It's making sure that the democracy is all inclusive, that we're making sure to reach out to people who maybe don't have access. As was brought up in the last session, there are people who are only accessing the internet for 15 minutes at a time at their local libraries. If you really look around in those libraries, often you'll see YouTube and MySpace are the sites that people are going to, which could potentially have a certain level of engagement, but not necessarily. And part of this is about really accessing communities and understanding that, helping them to understand that they have a voice, whoever that community might be, and helping to really start eliciting those responses. I think what Peter Corbett displayed with his Critical Grave framework for citizen-driven innovation in government IT is really a good breakdown of what's possible currently. And what I want to focus on is the problem sourcing aspect of this, or the solution sourcing. The concept is, you know, how do we really get people to participate, to explain what it is that they would like to see in their community. And again, using this framework, if I knew this, I could do that, and building out from there. The thought is to really get creative responses, sort of out-of-the-box solutions, and I think that's what there's a big opportunity here for, as we start thinking about how do we engage people who don't have the technical background and haven't necessarily been asked to creatively think outside of the box about what's really possible in their communities. Often we are faced with a lot of the barriers of creating anything in our community. You know, questions are of, I don't even know necessarily where to throw trash out on the street, much less how can I really become an active and engaged member of my community and band together with other creatives to make an impact, make a difference. One example that I really like by another pioneer, Steve Lambert, is he went to San Francisco and asked city planners to think really abstractly and creatively about what could be possible in radical urban planning. And they initially came back with some examples of what has already been done in other cities, such as increased bike lanes or more trees. And he said, well, let's think, you know, really outside the box. And so this is one example where they reimagined the commuter trains in total as dog parks or as a gym, a commuter gym, community market while being in transit. And I think it represents to me a really exciting opportunity to really think collectively and brainstorm, but also the question then I think for us and for a room like this is how do we really start actualizing this? How do we start pulling in that data to make a powerful conversation that actually goes somewhere? So we've had sort of an initial brainstorm session with, you know, if I knew this, I could do that. We've seen a really broad variety of answers. Some of which are very easy to wrap one's head around. If I knew how to arrange the necessary permits, I could help to realize more community and public art projects. If I knew which buildings with a good floor were empty, I would organize silent discos and hit and run milongas. which I thought was pretty hysterical. But part of the question is, once these people are actually coming up with ideas, is there a way to then connect them directly? I think part of the Apps for Democracy project is that it's sort of centralized. There are a lot of community leaders that are coming out and participating already, but they're not necessarily networked among one another. And then there are the community leaders that are really just disconnected from the internet and disconnected from these conversations. And how can we go in and activate them? So I guess I really want to open it up and start brainstorming what is a way that we can talk to community-based organizations. How can we activate NGOs to start thinking creatively? Because NGOs are really fantastic hubs in the communities. Nonprofit organizations are really powerful hubs in their communities because they're connected to so many people. And those connections can be utilized when those people aren't connected online, because then you can create one digital center, but start really cultivating those concepts and ideas, and then connecting them to the other hubs rather than just being one sort of centralized. I'd just like to start to open it up and hear about, I think, initially, what projects have people heard of that already exist at the community level that engage people, and how can we start thinking about it in the more technological sense of giving tools and creating tools for citizen engagement, and then how can we create a framework for answering, if I knew this, I could do that. Because the question itself, if I knew this, I could do that, is knowing something, knowing what you don't know, knowing that you need to know it, and knowing what could be done once you actually know it. And that's a three-step process that really requires a good deal of facilitation. So maybe we can break that down with the, what don't I know, what could I do if I knew it? There we go.
Can you turn this off? Or?
Yeah.
Cool. I think I can do that.
There's actually a remote control over there.
Oh. I think I have some markers from the back. That would be great. Okay. And so, just to clarify, part of the reason that that we wanted to kind of workshop this and bring everybody's perspective into this is because this summer, Community in Action has fellows who are going to be going around to different community-based organizations, nonprofit organizations in the city and talking to them. And part of the conversation is how to connect them, how to connect people who are less connected to kind of all of these really great open gov initiatives that are happening. So kind of we wanted to really bring your ideas into this of how we could facilitate a conversation for people who are maybe less tech savvy. Yeah.
So what's your insight collection strategy? Fellows go on site with a non-tech
staff
or
nonprofit.
What is?
Sorry, I missed the question.
What is the insight collection strategy for when you actually meet with these probably non-tech savvy nonprofits?
I mean, that's what we're really trying to.
Yeah. Here's your one good idea. If your fellows have iPhones or any given phone, use something like Utterly, or I like from the iPhone using Tumblr. And creating audio Tumblr blogs, so all of your fellows will have an insights collection platform directly on their phone. So they walk in and say, hey, we want to talk about the problem of homelessness in Williamsburg. Can you tell us about that? Yeah, the problem is they don't have, the nonprofit doesn't have to do anything except for talk, right? And that gets captured, it's redistributable, it's embeddable, it's everything only.
What was the first one you mentioned?
Utterly.
Utterly.
U-T-T-L-E.
And I think that's a great point. I mean, I think that video and audio is a great way to really make this more living and put a personal face onto it. And but I think that's part of the end strategy. You know, after having a community brainstorm and figuring out some of the issues that they're facing and how those issues can be addressed, and how we can incorporate the government in that conversation. How do we brainstorm about those solutions first, and then come out with a compelling short video that can then be pulled in and remixed and generally just online.
So talking about how to brainstorm, maybe we should start by brainstorming the list of some of the issues that can be worked around, that can be worked on through open data, through open government, that people might not immediately think of. Obviously, a lot of people in this room have thought a lot about that. So, come up with a list. Sure.
So I had two ideas, which essentially on similar topics. So one idea is there's a service from Amazon called Mechanical Turk, where you could batch load like thousands. very simple task, and then, you know, people will do it like, you know, for 10 cents per task. So like do like mechanical chart, I don't know if people are aware what this is or not, but basically mechanical chart for social services. It's like very simple tasks that you could volunteer for, like, you know, like pick up, you know, food and drop it on the way home at some particular house. So like very simple tasks that some people could do just because they walk in the town all day. So like, and just like build this, so all nonprofits will fit into this list. Like simple tasks that could be done, but they don't have time to do. Or like, and also Visa has this huge list of great people website for nonprofit organization and a huge amount of technical folks signed up and just build people website from each person like one day. But you know, Peter himself wouldn't do it.
It's a good little micro story. There's a nonprofit in DC that aggregated like 60 web projects that all little nonprofits needed, and it sat for 6 months. And I said, give it to me. We put it on a wiki, sent the link to the wiki to all the tech people in DC, and 35 projects were completed in 2 weeks. Right? Because the nonprofits don't know how to find web developers to do it's just crazy.
Yeah. And also around this subject, to kind of formalize it, essentially there are like three components. One component is like people in need of service or some physical object, the people who have the service or physical object, and their like delivery mechanism that should happen. So it's like three things. And just like custom made those pieces so they could happen like in bulk. And so one issue could be like, you know, a kid who whose parents cannot afford to buy books. So like there are millions of people who have books and don't need them. And there are people who probably, you know, pass by those two locations and could just pick up a book from one and drop it to another. So it's like very simple task, but because the three groups never talk to each other or unfrequently interact, like, you know, kids basically not getting books every day, like new books every day. So it's, and you could figure out lots of stuff, like homeless people and homeless, you know, providers. It's basically great iPhone applications, like, you know, you take a picture of homeless person, GPS him, and like people who provide service to them, they will, you know, find them on the street and feed them. It's kind of.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I didn't connect those three. What was the third one?
Delivery of, if it's physical good, like for example, food, you have to deliver food from point A to point B.
Okay.
Or like clothes, books, money, pretty much anything is physical. A physical delivery.
Just a thought on if I knew this, I could do that. It's a tough question, as Mark said, because people don't always know what they don't know.
Yeah.
But it might be good if, you know, the first half of the question could be answered, you know, in groups like this and communities and experts, so that we could kind of create like a top 10 list of things that did you know that you don't know this about your city, and then have people start from there to brainstorm off of those sort of hot ideas that they think they might know.
Yeah.
And I mean, the point about coming, looking at it from the nonprofit's perspective, their question is more like, what am I trying to do? I mean, some of these things that Dimitri was listing are the sort of the jobs that they're trying to perform, the outcomes. And that's what, you know, developers, designers, strategists, people, if you're going to work with any entity, you need to know their outcomes. So the question on the website is more the question from a developer's perspective, but it might be good to have another flip side version that's, here's what I'm trying to do, and then developers can come and match up with the data that potentially could help facilitate or improve the efficiency of that.
And even just flipping the question goes to that same thing. If I could do this if I knew this. And then it comes from the perspective of a nonprofit. I'm trying to do this, and it gets them in that sort of creative mindset of, what is it that I'm actually fundamentally missing that would make this simple?
Yeah. And part of what I was thinking was just understanding local value and saying, okay, what do you know that few people know that you consider is really valuable information? And then finding that, okay, well, now there are people who know things. And okay, now we have other people who need to know things. And can we match them up in any way? And how do we get around that? What are the privacy concerns of actually connecting them directly? And other are there other ways to start building this? But I really like that concept of getting people to state what they need, and then finding the developers and having them.
Because sometimes focusing on the what am I going to measure may not be really helping you with the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So getting that outcome is kind of, for me at least, the deal breaker. You really need to have clear outcomes in order to understand then how to apply a solution. So,
yeah.
This is something a little more in terms of connecting with people on the ground. And I left New York about 2 years ago, but right before that, Idealist was starting this project where they were reaching out and encouraging individuals to form community groups. And they were sort of pushing that, and I don't know what happened to it, but there could either be lessons for how to form those community groups that they learned, or alternatively, maybe some of those groups are still going, and that could be an excellent network to tap into for extending those.
I emailed Ann Lincoln Hannigan about this, and I was like, oh, sorry, we didn't get it. We're almost ready. So we definitely know about what's going on.
Very cool.
Probably.
So would it make sense to brainstorm some of those things that people wouldn't know that they can then tap into when they do have a problem that they need to be solved, and they do have these things that they want to do, but they don't know exactly how to do them, and just kind of have a list of some of the options for them to go through and consider.
Can I just jump in? I think it seems like the frame of the discussion has sort of expanded and changed a little bit as far as what the people in this room are talking about. And it seems to be more about a way of matching needs and resources, right? That's the main thing. And I'm interested in that because I was working like last year sometime with Neil, who signed up from the Open Planning Project. I don't think he's here today.
I'll be here later, I think.
Okay, I'm creating a micro format for describing, it would be like for describing needs on one side and resources on the other. And microformat is just a standardized way of representing things in code so that computers can match them up. So you could say, I need this thing at this time within this location space, and I need this much of it. And then someone could say, I have this thing at this time in this location space and this much of it. And then if you can formalize that, you could actually have everyone in the city doing that, and then just they all find each other.
So whatever happened with that?
I got busy.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I've got it up on Wiki somewhere. So
I'm going to throw a link out into the stream and tag it. I did a session at Transparency Camp and Government 2.0 Camp on sort of exactly that, a little bit different way. I envisioned it as a gating system, literally, where you sign up as a provider or a needer of certain things. You fill out your profile. Algorithm says based on proximity and the profiles you've created, you're most likely to be served best by this person with that need. And really, you literally could use an open source dating platform framework and hack it up to work that way instead of coding it from scratch. But there's a lot more involved, like talking about social capital accumulation. Once someone's matched, they're no longer a part of the matching stream, and then they get divorced, and was that a discrete need, or was that something that is an ongoing need, like elderly care or something like that. So after that divorce happens, they go back into the matching pool if it's an ongoing need, et cetera.
What are some of those open source dating platforms?
There's a number of open source dating platforms, mostly PHP-based stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find them out there.
And Matt, what was the name of your project? How would I describe it in a few words?
Resource Exchange Protocol.
Okay, cool.
But what have people found, I mean, just maybe through their personal experiences? Also something that Peter brought up was one way to incentivize people actually making these products for the mayor's office was so that they could then explain to their family as well, this is what I do, and the mayor thought it was really cool. How do people explain some of this open government stuff to the layperson? What are people's strategies? I think that might be a good way to start thinking about, okay, well, then how can we strategize on top of that?
Well, can we bring it even broader and say, what is open government, or what does that mean to you? Is it open data? Is it networking and resource sharing? Like, what does it mean to access your government? What does it mean to you to have an open government? When I'm talking to people in our development process, there's a huge disconnect for know, what I'm thinking in my head and, you know, what some decisions are making personally in my interaction with them.
I have a big answer to that, and that is, I mean, what does open government mean to me? That means that the government listens, actually genuinely listens to what I'm saying. It has a platform that it supposedly has been entrusted by the people to do, and continues to operate in that manner through all different technological means. So that means that as we encroach upon the digital participation, it participates in those spheres of conversation. So it is on Twitter and actually has an active participation and listening engine. It's on Facebook. It's represented in all those different digital communities. I mean, I have my own personal criticisms against Mayor Bloomberg, but so it also, it's out within the community boards. It's actually participating in those community boards, and it's helping, trying to percolate all these conversations that are happening at really at the deep municipal level, entrenched in all the different types of city government, and allowing that for people to find all these different pieces of information. And that goes all the way up to the top, and figuring out how to enable that type of framework of being able to have these pieces of minutes and notes being posted to the web that are searchable, that are can be aggregated and can be repurposed in some other way is really, really important. I mean, it also talks about, you know, having video and really all these amazing things that we're seeing that these types of cheap technology can enable. And then also that the tools that exist that are incorporated into the practice of government are freely available for public use and for readoption across the board. So in other words, any tool that is adopted by government software-wise is something that is available for the public to use. Just like Obama has this mantra about healthcare, any healthcare that a congressman or a senator has should be the base level of healthcare that every American citizen should have. Well, the same thing goes for the types of software that's used within government. Any software that's used within government should be able to be used within any other public organization because it is paid for by the people. So therefore, it should be able to be leveraged by the people for communal distribution. On top of that, you know, it's really about the basis of the standards. We have roads that are out there that allow for commerce and for transportation of anything else. And we should have, that is where the government should be for within the greater open openness.
So accessible. Is that what you, like, accessible with the roads?
In some way, accessibility is one thing, but it's about a standards, accessible.
See, I think Lily's really onto something. I think it's good to start with, you know, the question of what is open government, but I think it's important to break it down to, you know, how would one explain it to their mother, so that they get it. Like, if I told my mom that answer, she would smack me, you know. And I want to make sure that it's very concise, clear. Like, this is what I mean when I mean open government.
Everything that you pay for, you get to read or see, which is very rough, right? But the definition of open government then is everything you pay for, which is all the data collection the government does around health and education, all that stuff, you get to see it, right? We'd love it if it was in a standard format, right, which would make it extensible and accessible and all the rest, but God, if not, we at least want access to it, right? Which that's the first phase. You get these non-machine readable formats. But ideally, they would be standard. So I say, you know, Grandma, we're going to be able to see everything that we pay for. And that's what makes citizens go, wait a second, I'm paying for this stuff, and why are they hiding it in a basement somewhere, right? As long as there's no, like, you know, security concerns or personal identifying information concerns, you should be able to have access to it. That's open government.
Okay, cool. I think there are any other hands.
Yeah, kind of to tie into both what Noel and you're saying, licensing is a really important part of that, and enshrining in law the right of people to have access to the data that they paid for. This framing of, like, I paid for it, I should get to see it, is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Wait, is there,
sort of piggybacking on like government listens.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, like for people to speak, it should be like there should be a mechanism to speak easily, because like with 311, for example, what we discussed before, there are so many issues, but they're never reported. And they never reported because it's too hard to explain to government what you want government to fix. So, and these kind of government listens, we have phone numbers, they listen every day. But people just don't not talking because it's too hard, it's too much effort. So that's kind of other part of the government.
Yeah.
Should be easily, so you should be able to easily communicate what you need from your government.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I would still describe that as accessible. Maybe not only, maybe that's not a word that's like adequate, but like accessibility, it's
easy to
be able to access is important. Yeah. Somebody else? Yeah.
And there's some kind of disconnect, though. I mean, the New York State Senate is in paralysis at the moment, and there was an article in the New York Times that said that 80% of the people who are elected are in safe districts. They have no fear of being opposed in their campaigns. So I know the data is absolutely critical, but what's the relationship between the reality of the people who have political power and all of this data? If it's going to be a tool to expose them and to make them accountable, that's great. But if it's...
Can I rebut real quickly?
Sure.
Just talk about open data. So this past week, while the elected officials of the New York State Senate are in a bit of a quandary of who is in charge of the actual House of the Senate chamber, the chief technology officer, the CIO, Andrew Hoffman, who should be here tomorrow, we haven't stopped working for the people. And we announced open.nysenate.gov, which is a platform for the open participation for you to actually take a look at all of the legislative bills for what have been going on within the Senate, as well as taking a look at, this is part of a whole long thing of also allowing for committee pages, which is the first time that never before in the history of the New York Senate can you actually see content that's attributed to the different committees that had been meeting up until June 8th. Never before have you been able to actually go through the Senate website and to see all the different content that's being produced through the press releases and all the photos and all that stuff. Like, that, while the electoral side is hung up, there's still a lot of work that can be done within the digital activity, or the not activity side, but with accessibility side.
I don't mean to underestimate the importance of this at all. I think it's an extraordinary tool. But the disconnect between what you know and are increasingly knowing and making public officials responsible and reactive to that information seems to be a very important area to talk about.
Yeah, there's clear to me that do the political ways in which we form, like, do those need to evolve the same way our access and our transparency are evolving, and will all that open data like make a difference in terms of the elections? Like, those are really important questions.
There's this participation camp, and that's what comes after transparency and open government. So once you've got the data, what do the people do with it? Because Obama broke open government down into transparency, participation, and collaboration. And so I think what transparent data does to enable participation is it gives everybody in the community a common thing to point to, and if you're progressive enough government to provide actual discussion spaces around that, and there's this sort of sanctified public discussion space in which the officials do not have any more power than the citizens, then they can start to actually become more of a political body than perhaps they were before. That's like the argument that makes sense.
I kind of wanted to bring us back a little to what we're doing with Open My City, and also this sort of idea of where is my money going with the open government stuff. And maybe it's, and getting people to understand what their communities need, and maybe it's seeing first where their money is going in a very simple way. Where is my money going with environment? Where is my money going with, neighborhoods and all of that? And then that'll help them understand what needs to be done further, what they want in their neighborhoods further. So maybe it's a two-step process. Maybe it's a very simple database, website, anything, you look up your neighborhood or something like that. And then, once I see that
these are all the things that are happening in my neighborhood, then maybe I'm like, oh, this isn't happening in my neighborhood. This is what I need. So I think that may be something that could tie in both of those.
The moment's passed a little, but I'm furious with the Senate and everything we're talking about.
I think we're all furious with the Senate. Let's table that.
All these tools, but there's a disconnect, and I'm sure there will be for years to come, between the way democracy has worked the last 200 years or so that, you know, wasn't based on computers, and what we can do now that, you know, we have orders of magnitude more ability to communicate and to process. But it's just incredibly frustrating that we can kind of, you know, talk around the edges about this stuff, but it feels like there's a very limited capacity to throw up a website called Kick the Bums Out and send every senator home in 2010. Like, I would love to see that happen, but realistically, I don't think it will.
But also, I think it's important to understand that there's an opportunity here to really stress the person-to-person connections, the P2P, because I think that at the media level, the story that we've been getting, aside from the social networks and like the Twitter revolution, has been if you send an email petition, it's not really going to do anything. Like, they're getting thousands of emails, and is that really going to influence things? Not really. But it's a question of what is participation, what is engagement, what does it mean at the community level?
All of this has also been tied into the media culture that we live in, and national politics are sexier than local politics. So people are, you know, quicker to jump on the Obama campaign than something local, but you only need a couple thousand votes to win a local election. So, like, if this room wanted to kick Espada, or whatever his name is, out of office, tough, but it's not completely out of the realm of possibility the way that trying to do something on a national level would.
Nick?
Yeah.
I have a question that's a bit more long-term, but because you mentioned the Twitter revolution, I know that it's very important that we use all the social tools available to us because they, as we've seen, they can do amazing things, but I think we're all kind of reeling from what happened in Iran recently, and the fact that when we look at these tools, we're not really looking as closely at the infrastructure behind them and how actually that enables democracy as we are. We've kind of squatted an infrastructure which it seems can be taken away from us very quickly and not become as useful as it was. And I was just thinking that maybe we need to, as well as, you know, imagining the amazing ways we can use these tools like Twitter, because, you know, the real-time web is just phenomenal, what it offers us. But I'm wondering whether we need to really put our imaginations at the infrastructure, because, you know, all the brouhaha about the Siemens Nokia business, all those tools are here in the US. They're exactly the same tools. They're everywhere. And when we saw how quickly the Iran got shut down on those tools, I'm just wondering if we need to really start getting our imaginations going on this too, because, I mean, it's a hard one.
The hardware side?
No, I suppose it's the network side of it. I'm talking about that it's almost like we're just assuming. It's only like 50 years since, you know, fascism in Western Europe.
It's really an interesting point. I mean, we are building peer-to-peer networks, right? And that's possible with Wi-Fi networks now. I mean, you could easily envision 10, 20 years from now, we're covered by a global open WiMAX field, right? Where no one can shut that down. We probably could today using a satellite pipe Wi-Fi down into Iran, but I'm pretty sure they'd probably nuke Israel if we did that. So, you know, that's really interesting. We usually think about the software, not the hardware.
Yeah, it's just...
The one thing, though, I guess in terms of, like, sort of the context of what the definition, because of what's been happening lately, I keep looking at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 19, which says, everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media, regardless of frontiers. Which I think is that's part of this issue of this transparency, but I don't know when that was written, but it seems incredibly timely as a way to, how do we renew that definition in a digital world?
Yeah.
And I think that the model that we create in the US is going to be what influences the world overseas. I mean, quick side note, Twitter revolution I met in Moldova, but in traveling around the world, people are really looking at what we come up with in these rooms as the models of what engagement will look like overseas, and you know, part of that is going to be curtailed by the fact that there's an opportunity for surveillance, regardless of sort of what tools are used and what is the level of repression by any government. But that's.
And it should be noted that a lot of these tools and techniques are being built, are in active development, and they are incredibly unsexy. And nobody except the real, you know, fire breathers knows about them or cares about them. A thing like the Tor network.
Right, they're very upset.
You know,
they're difficult, aren't they?
They're you know, crazy long-bearded guys at MIT that 20 years later, everybody goes, oh yeah, we should be doing that. But we have a lot of these tools. We have encryption. You know, the internet is a decentralized network that was, you know, built to not have a single dependency. But I think it will take a long time for that kind of technology to penetrate, you know, the Windows PCs that 90% of people use.
Yeah. But even so, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to bring this up too, but the whole Michael Jackson thing prevented information from coming out of Iran. So it's not just the hardware infrastructure problem, it's also a software infrastructure. Building these tools, using these tools for noble important purposes that can really be taken away from us at any moment for something, I don't know, it's trivial to me.
What do you mean it prevented?
That's a social problem.
Yeah.
That's
but
that we
it's
care
it's
more about Michael Jackson than Iran.
It's
I don't think Michael Jackson prevented communication.
We got
yeah,
Twitter.
Actually,
it slowed down Twitter.
It slowed down Twitter.
Oh,
it
you think because
it's
more failures?
It crashed Twitter.
But like 5
a.m.
Michael Jackson
was trending 50% of all tweets.
Right.
Iran was never higher than 5.
But I think we're getting off topic. I mean, I really want to pull it back to if I knew this, I could do that. And I really like the quote by Peter, you know, everything you pay for, you get to read or see. There's still a leap there. For one, I think that we don't want to aggravate community in saying, yeah, I'm paying too much. Or when you start at the financial, is that a difficult way to engage? Are people going to be ready to say, well, this is what I'm paying for? And are we ready yet to explain, okay, well, this is what you're getting with it? And is that going to be an information overload? Is it more of a question of, okay, then, well, what are you not seeing in your community? Where do you think, maybe it's about mapping where people think that their money is going to, and actually getting an insight of what people actually think that their government is doing, and showing the disconnect between what their government is actually doing from what they believe it to be doing, and trying to then work toward bridging that disconnect, and then creating more of a citizenry that feels that they're representation is actually representative of what their beliefs are. What are feelings about that?
I actually think this would tie what you're saying actually with the conversation that was going on is that I think it is often a social thing, and the other thing about the tools is that tools might exist and they're out there, but if people don't know how to use them, then it won't be useful to the general populace. It won't help the general population participate. And so I think that's part of the question is, is Michael Jackson, I mean, I tweeted about Michael Jackson, like, it mattered to me. It didn't matter necessarily more than Iran, but it was kind of addressing me. How do we make this government that governs, you know, so many aspects of our lives, how do we make that so that people do care about, like, daily basis? Like, how do we give people a sense of, how do we channel passion towards that sort of thing? I think that's part of it.
Well, what I was just trying to say is that, I mean, if you care about open government, and you were talking about encryption, and preserving the means that we do open government. I mean, that's the problem. It doesn't matter that we didn't pay for it. It matters that we rely upon it, and that here was a very open government-related concern that was shut down even for a short time. It doesn't matter that it was a short time. It matters that the means that people were using to communicate was gone, and that they relied upon it. And that's the important. So the important issue is protecting and developing software infrastructure, not just hardware.
I think this is interesting because, you know, I agree that what we pay for, we should be able to see and access, right? And that's a slice of what I think open government means to me. But additionally, I think open government also means my ability to, you know, voice my opinions, my ability to communicate and, you know, in the end, hold our officials accountable, right? And so it's a two-way street, right? Open government means being able to access the data from the government in addition to accessing our government by communicating better with them. And, you know,
what platform and what are the means that we can do that and enable that efficiently?
And actually, that is a really good point, because right now there's a corporate layer between us and our government. We rely on Google or on Twitter or on these corporations to access our government. And what is the responsibility there to keep that layer between us and them transparent?
And I also think part of this education and part about holding government accountable is just feeling like you actually will influence anybody if you do. I mean, so much of what happens to you is just thinking that your voice doesn't matter, you're not going to be able to make a difference. And as we start to show that your voice can matter, and I think that was part of the power of the Obama campaign, that more people will become active and will use maybe.
I'll try to give my own definition of what open governments means for me. And I would say that open governments is government that is open to people's needs. And actually, it's different than just being transparent, because transparent means that government has this kind of data or knowledge, so government knows something and people want to access that. But what happens is that people can ask that. Okay, we want to know that, but government may answer, not that we cannot give you this information, but it's just, we don't know that too. Okay, let me explain. Government has, I'm from public administration perspective, so I studied government performance and how they measure performance. And they do have lots of measures, and what they measure gets done. If there is no measure, there is no data, they don't do that. And actually, there is a disconnect between what governments do and what they measure, what kind of data they have, and what people have, what people need. Now, let me give an example. In my city in Syracuse, the Maxwell School conducted a survey. So they asked the citizens what they want in their city to be done. And then people would say, well, in terms of, police, it's this and this, and then public works, it's this and this. And then they ask government, what do you measure? And actually, there was too much disconnect in that. So people want some things, but government, measure and does other things completely. Maybe another example. There was a non-profit organization, Paul Epstein actually wrote a good book, Governing for Results. And he gave a good example of citizen-driven performance measuring. So with roads in this city, New York City, they asked people what do they want with roads. And actually, the answer was quite surprising, because people were concerned less about potholes. They were concerned about the evenness of roads. So what they did is they designed a scanner. They put that scanner on a car, and they measured how even were the roads in the city. And actually, that's just one of the examples. And my point is that let's try to help to connect what people want with what government does and what it measures. Because it's one thing to have access to the data, but maybe it's the wrong data, okay?
So it's the official end of the session, but we're going into lunch and we can run over a little bit. I just wanted to throw it back to Mark to say there was sort of a purpose and a goal to the session, and just see if we can reestablish that in the last few minutes, like arrive at some next steps or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the goal of the session is really to create a workshop to figure out how to actually go to a community organization and get them to answer creatively, if I knew this, I could do that. Get that onto video and start collecting some of these stories, figuring out how to then give that to developers and have them start working with this and creating some of the Apps for Democracy energy that's so exciting from down in D.C. I mean, I think we have a lot of issues that we've raised from both ideas for answering that question, but also a lot of what the barriers are to actually achieving this open government problem. I think that's not something that's going to be easy to overcome. But as we come up with more more ideas ourselves of what we consider to be open government, I think it's important to start stressing that and being able to convey it to our loved ones, to our community, and otherwise is going to be really powerful, because I think that as we see the overall media just sort of spiraling and figuring out what they're doing, it's going to be a grassroots effort to really ensure that government starts becoming more open and for people to really start achieving that voice.
Can I just add, there's a case study in the UK currently in progress I thought I'd like to share with you. Just go to Google, put Kent County Council Fix or Mix project. And basically,
can you repeat that?
It's Kent County Council Fix and Mix project.
Pick and mix.
Yes. Basically, it's a mashup program by Kent County Council. What they're doing is they're opening up grants for local businesses, NGOs, to just come forward and give their ideas, and they're actually getting to provide training. So it could be anyone who doesn't actually know how to develop any sort of mashup, doesn't have any technical capability, and Kent County Council will help them to develop those applications coming from the community. And this is actually in progress, so it's not actually done yet, but it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. And I think this is a great, initiative by the county council themselves to actually get the citizens themselves to develop an application that they feel that they need and that they want. So, yeah, that's a good idea, I think, to get.
Sorry, one more time, it's Kent County Council.
Yeah, Pick and Mix.
Pick and Mix
project, which is basically a mashup project for all the open data that is happening at the moment.
That's great. I think we'll all check that out. One really strong takeaway I had in terms of answering the question of how do you build a workshop was the suggestion of switching around the order of the question, and I think that really hits upon a lot. For people who aren't as involved in the projects who aren't technologists, they really have a question of what are the problems we want to solve, and therefore, how do we start to get to the solutions? What is the information that can be used for that? So I really like that idea of switching it around. I'm sure that for workshops, having some examples of open gov and having some of these, I think each one of these definitions is really strong and it represents different visions as well. You know, there's a lot of different room for diversity within that, but that could really help the workshops as well. So I think those are two really strong things for going into workshops with nonprofits. I wonder, maybe since it's time for lunch, maybe people just have any like final recommendations on if you were the one approaching a community-based organization this summer and you could help them envision the answer to, if I do this, I could do this. What would be your one takeaway from it? What would be the one thing you'd make sure to do, whether it's the selection strategy or whether it's a question you would ask?
It's in reverse. I could do this if I do that. I mean, because it's tough to know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. In terms of actually framing it, I think this is a really strong suggestion.
And do some people have answers to this that we can already put up?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm a researcher, basically, I interview local citizens as well as local governments, and I find that when I had conversations with citizens themselves, they actually came up with some really good ideas, a lot of working parents, they want to know when the nursery is open, when the school closes, how many hours you have to pay extra to get, if they pick up their children late. I mean, this is sort of like down-to-earth reality type of data that they want from their local government. So by just having conversations, developers and with the citizens, then we could possibly could work together to develop something that people really, really need.
And maybe there's that Mechanical Turk element to it, where if you help somebody and you give them that advice, you can get 10 cents. Maybe that's part of government funding to encourage that peer-to-peer participation, friendliness, helpfulness.
Yeah, it's all about empowering people, I think. It's about empowering people to make their lives better.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's great, and something that that sort of touches on is that people responding to that one-on-one human interaction and then taking it to the website or the database or the next level in terms of technology, but you know, having that conversation with them about what they need in their community, I think you could really get those ideas, you know, being on the street, being at their homes, being where, you know, in community centers where they hang out and exist.
I tweeted out a link into the stream here. If you just look for, I guess it's open space MySpace Gov, you'll see some of the tweets about this session. In the city of Alexandria, they hired us to figure out how to build nonprofit capacity. What we came up with is a framework of basically identifying very, very specific problems each week, putting a community manager against that problem, and then sourcing all the people who have the ability to solve that problem for that nonprofit, and just doing that every week, right? So what you'll do is you'll start with just being able to tackle maybe 4 or 5 problems a month, but as you build more community managers, you'll be able to do 50 a month and 100, et cetera. And that's all about focusing on acute needs. So whether it's that, you know, where do I donate my crib, or where do I, how do we find a refrigerator to have perishable food in it for the food bank? Just identifying, focusing on problem, provider, and matching them through a very specific framework, I think makes a lot of sense.
Is that the dating site?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's different.
The dating site is too big a build. We want to make it very lightweight, not expensive for the city to view. And you'll see kind of a map of it. You can find that link. It's like WordPress in the middle, Google Group, Eventbrite for RSVPs, you know, how Twitter hooks in, how project management hooks in, all this other stuff. And it's something that we've been working on for about 2 months. And it's focus grouped with, you know, 100 plus people in the nonprofit space in Alexandria. They've all agreed that this is the right way to solve their problems in that city. And if it works there, then it probably could and should work anywhere, which is hopefully, you know, our goal.
That's a great framework. Thank you. Any other comments before we break for lunch? And if anybody wants to say, you know, to add any individual